Thank you, David. Hi, guys. Glad to see everybody on here. Today is February the 21st, 2014. We have two keynote speakers, John Durash from the National Liberty Alliance, and our local guy, Charlie Sewell. And we're so glad that they're both here, and we're looking forward to this conversation. And, John, I guess you can probably you and Charlie can just start out talking and get a dialect going. And I yield the floor.
All right. Well, I'll let Charlie start because I'm not sure exactly the topic yet, but I yield the floor.
Well, hey, John, it's good to talk with you. I listened to a great audio today. Hang on a minute here. From Awake and Empowered Radio. And that was great listening to that. You know, I'm like you. I'm just a student. I'm not an attorney or a lawyer or a scholar. And I don't give any advice. We're just discussing America here under peaceful assembly. And I'm like you, John. I'm an American that wants to get America back. And by golly, we're in trouble. I do want to say that I welcome any and all federal, state, and local agents. I'm glad you're here with us. I hope you'll join in when the questioning starts, because this is all about the truth of the four organic laws of the United States and about our children and our grandchildren and what's going to be there. I've shared some documents with David that he was supposed to send out to everybody. And again, the only documents I rely on are the four organic laws of the United States of America, the Supreme Court rulings, and the code as it's written, because it has to be in harmony with the Constitution, otherwise it's treason. And the Congress also has to provide remedy, and they do. Oftentimes it's hard for us to find it and invoke it. What's brought this conversation together with John and I is I've read some of the documents, and from my point of view in looking at the organic laws, a lot of people have some confusion with who we the people are versus just the people. And I'd expressed that to David, and he wanted me to have a conversation, and so that's why we're here. And one of the documents I sent out to people that I had David send out is the document that says, "Who do people in 1776?" And I don't know if anybody had an opportunity to look at that. So I'll just go over this one thing, and then John can start a dialogue too. If you go to the Virginia Declaration of Rights, and we're going to go do the Virginia Declaration of Rights and the Declaration of Independence side by side. It starts out a Declaration of Rights made by the representatives of the good people of Virginia, with a small p, assembled in full and free convention with rights due pertain to them and their posterity as the basis and foundation of government. And then, and we'll get back into this later, one of the most exciting to me is Article 2 of the Virginia Declaration of Rights. It says all power is vested in and consequently derived from the people with a small p, that magistrates are their trustees, servants, and at all times amenable to them. Then if you go to the bottom of that page, the Declaration of Independence of 1776, it says when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people with a small p to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another. And then if you go down a little further, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, government is instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the government. And whenever the form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people with a capital P to alter or abolish it and to institute a new government, laying the foundation on which principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall be most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And I think it's important to look at the Declaration of Independence because it starts out with the one people, and then it says the right of the people with a capital P. And if you look here, you realize they're still colonies. They're getting ready to start the transition. If you go to the top of page 2, which has the last sentence of the Declaration of Independence, it says, "We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and the authority of the good people of these colonies," again with a capital P, still colonies, that when you go out 11 years to the Constitution, it changes. It says the Constitution of the United States, September 17, 1787, says, "We the people in the United States." Now we have a definite transition here, because this is 11 years after the Declaration of Independence. The states have been formed. These are the states writing the Constitution. And we have a definite definition of the United States in the Constitution, which is our Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, which is the constitutional definition of the United States. And the United States, as defined by the Constitution, is not coast to coast and border to border. It's just the federal territories and the District of Columbia. And when I was at David's house before Christmas, we were talking about this. And if you look at the preamble to the Constitution where it says, "We the people," and then if you come to the bottom part, half of page 2, where it talks about the preamble and the Article 1, 2, and 4, you see that in each of those it says the right of the people with a small p. And in my humble opinion, that tells you that they're talking about two different people. We the people of the United States, from what I've read and from Barron versus City of Baltimore, which we'll get into, is very powerful because it is the elected representatives that are doing this. That's why it's we the P with a capital P. And that's why when the Bill of Rights was done, it was a small p because it was referring to all the people, the American people. And so when I had read some of the documents, hang on. Where do I have it? Give me just a moment. I had read the New York Presentment for High Treason. I've read the John's Writ of Mandamus. And I just saw what I thought was some mixing of the two things, these terms. And so I just wanted to point that out. And so I just wanted to bring that up. And I guess, John, I'll cede the floor to you.
All right. So I guess the concern is what terms we might use, whether people, small p or large p, or maybe the word citizen or things of that nature, which we got to be careful with when we go into the courts. Is that pretty much what you're talking about particularly?
Right, because they are such sticklers. Well, you know, in listening to the audio today where you were talking about how they use terms, and I've been involved in the court. I've got friends that are at the Gray Bar Hotel, and they look for defects, and that's how they get people in jail.
Well, yeah, it's that may be have some truth to it, but I think the truth really is that people put themselves in a box. You know, anybody who's been looking and studying Thornton, he came up with some good points, and one of the main points he brought up is that if you don't want to argue a point, don't bring it up, because they certainly won't. And my 4+ years in the courts, I have discovered that's absolutely true. I've also discovered that if you go into the federal court, they're very savvy. They're chess players. The state courts, they're second-grade checker players. I don't think they understand half of what's going on. I do know one thing they do know. We know that all of the judges, and I can only speak particularly for New York because that's where my experience is, all of the judges in all of the Nisi Prius courts, statutory courts, that is, like such as the town courts, the city courts, and other, you know, the village courts. All of those courts are Nisi Priya's courts, and the judges have been taught, they go to like a six-day school, judge school. They don't have to be a lawyer to become a judge. They'll let anyone to be a judge. And they go to a six-day school, and they come out, and one of the things that they train them in is the procedure of the court. And it, they make it absolutely crystal clear. There's no doubt in my mind, because I've been in too many of these places, to see that they twist around like a pretzel when we walk in or someone like us walks in, and they deny the jurisdiction, say they don't have any. And they really work so hard overtime to get that jurisdiction. And they'll put it off to another date and they'll try to figure out what they're going to do next time. And usually with us, a lot of that stuff keeps failing. And they put it off. Literally, you go month after month after month after month, you know, on the stupid, you know, tickets. And so they really get into that. We've learned how to stop that. But when you go into the state courts, we discovered that they're more savvy, but they're still just checker players. They have robbed the court, and I'm not sure. I think the judge may be aware of it. As a matter of fact, I'm sure he's aware of it. But they got a problem. They got a little bit of a problem in their thinking, because they're taught in bar school that common law has been done away with a long time ago. Some of these lawyers will tell me it's the 1800s. Others will tell me in the 1900s. They give me different time periods, so they're not even sure on this. So they must have made some changes in the school as they were teaching these people to become, you know, barristers. But the bottom line is when you hold down a court to the jurisdiction, and you know, and that judge remains silent. Well, silence is they acquiesce, and so therefore. They agree that the jurisdiction that they're trying to open in this court, and there's a conspiracy going between the lawyer and or the prosecutor, whichever it is, and the judge. They got a conspiracy to bring you into this Nisi Priya's court. Now, I don't think the judge thinks about it much, but I think when you jar him on these things, he starts to wonder about it, because I know they talk to him about it, and they train them about people like us to come into court and try to bring it into the common law side of the court. And the lawyers, usually, they haven't got a clue. I have not seen a lawyer that even has a clue yet. And so they're totally confused, but at least the judges, they've been a little bit schooled on this. But there's no way when I walk into court that they bring anything up of the fact that I got a license in my back pocket, or that I might have a banking account with a Social Security number, or that I'm registered to vote, and that I belong to a particular party maybe. They don't really know those things, but they definitely don't bring them up. One of the things I see that get a lot of people in trouble, in my opinion, is they get lost on all of the arguments, and they love that because you're only confusing yourself and you're looking crazy to the people who don't understand what you're talking about. But people are trying to get in there and set themselves up in language as being free. When we go into court, it's a very simple process. I'm one of the people of New York, and in this court of record, I'm suing A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, and I'm accepting all of the bonds and all of the oaths of all of the officers of this court, and this is the proceed according to the court of record. And then on my second page, I'll show the judge and say, you know, this is the definition of a court of record, which is one that proceeds according to common law. And I know that this side over here, none of these lawyers over here has disagreed with that. They haven't written anything in their papers, so they're in agreement with me. This is a common law procedure. And but one of the problems I have in this court is that we're in a Nisi Priya's process. So someone is confused, Your Honor, and I'm wondering if you can just confirm for me what court are we in. Are we in a Nisi Priya's court, or are we in a common law court? And that he's not going to answer that question. And he's going to twist and turn, and he's just going to become a pretzel up there, and I'm going to continue to object to the process, and I'll object and piss him off as far as I can before I think he'd try to hold me in contempt, which he doesn't have the authority to do, because a Nisi Priya's court cannot incarcerate or fine anyone. And so when you get to the final thing, you know, when the other side starts talking, you object again. This whole process, he's talking about statutes. Has nothing to do with the jurisdiction in this court, does it, Your Honor? And again, he's not going to answer that. But when the bottom line comes, especially when it's getting into, because you're only there for some silly meeting that they want to bring together so they can spend the people's monies. That's what, how the lawyers make their money. They write a paper and they come in with all these meetings. They make all these motions, and they're totally worthless, you know. And but the bottom line is when you walk out, before you walk out of that court, right before it ends, you object to the whole process. They're on the record, Your Honor. I want to make it sure on the record that I've objected to this whole process. I also would like to put onto the record that the judge had a duty to speak. He had been asked numerous times what jurisdiction he is in. I've made it clear that we're in a common law grand jurisdiction, and since the judge has remained silent, I've got to believe that he believes we're in an EC Prius court. And that's all I have to say. When you leave that court, it's a process of writing a writ of error, and if he made any decisions, turn it over in that writ of error, and then you muzzle the judge by simply adding him to the defendant's list, and the lawyer who made a conspiracy against you, who worked with that judge to hijack your court into an EC Prius court. And so now you have two more people on your list, in the defendant's list, and whoever hired the other lawyer, they got to now get their money back and go hire another lawyer, so this lawyer can hire his lawyer and the judge can hire their lawyer, and everybody's a little pissed off about that, and that's a good thing for us. But now we've muzzled the judge, and we now wait for the next judge. And each one of those individuals will be sued for $50,000 for each unalienable right that they violated upon me. And that's how you control any court, whether it's a town court or a Supreme Court. You muzzle them. They're never going to bring up the fact that if I used the word citizen, I wouldn't use that in court, that's for sure. But when it comes to terms like, let's take the Declaration of Independence, and you see where it speaks about, you know, we have a government by the consent of the people. And it does bring up on the top the unanimous declaration for the 13 United States of America. So they do make mention of the states, I think, on two occasions here in the Declaration of Independence. But as he goes on, he speaks of this, the 13 colonies that have a right to become a state. And when you get down to the end of the Declaration of Independence, they get out with, we therefore the representatives of the United States of America, small u, capital S of America, in general Congress, assembling, appealing to the supreme judge of the world, and so on and so forth. So they clearly understood the meaning of the United States, united being small, meaning this is a united group of states, and it's in the continent of America. And that went well. Now, it is true when you get into the Constitution, in the preamble, it does use a capital U and a capital, you know, for the United States of America. But one of the key things is the phrase itself, United States of America. If you look into Black's Law Dictionary, you'll find that if you look up the word government, the federal government, you will find that the meaning of the federal government is the federal government is of the United States of America. Now, when you take that in a logical fashion, the federal government cannot be of the federal government. No, it has to be the federal government of the United States of America. So the meaning of the term of the United States of America clearly is the United States. And so New York, New Jersey, and so on and so forth. So I don't see a problem with that word or that phrase using the United States of America. I think it's clear. Now, it is true that they did use a capital U. I was a little perplexed by that. But if the enemy was in there playing their word games, which they probably were, you know, certainly not our founding fathers. I mean, there are some people out there that actually believe that Washington is an enemy, and even that Jefferson is an enemy, and even that Benjamin Franklin, he was just some old guy that didn't know anything but chasing women. I mean, all that stuff comes from the enemy. Any of those three guys, if they weren't with us, America would not be. America is an impossibility without Jefferson. America is an impossibility without Washington. And America is an impossibility without Benjamin Franklin. Lose any of them and you lose America. Benjamin Franklin was the mentors to these young men, at least in those days when they were young men. Of course, you know, Washington was further on. But he was their mentor. He was the instigator of this whole thing. Jefferson was the spirit and the heart. He was the words. And Washington, he was the sword. And again, you needed all three. So with that said, you know, they obviously could not be the enemy. Now, were they the enemy amongst us when we were putting this together? And it didn't even necessarily have to be, any of the individuals in that room, but other people working with them and penning this stuff. And it's only a slip of playing with their word magic, so later on they can make the United States of America mean something else, maybe. I don't care. I am careful not using the word citizen. But in court, I definitely will never use that word. But I might use it outside sometimes, and I really don't care what they do with their words. When they're outside of the court, or if they're under us as a grand jury, they're in my sandbox. And they're definitely not going to bring those words up because we're in the public's eye, and we're going to be in the public's eye more and more. And they're definitely not going to play the word game magic in any way that they're going to reveal it in the public. So that's not going to happen there. And you know what? I want my language back. I really don't care what they say a person means. I know what a person means. They try to make it mean something else, and they go into the Black's Law, and over 100 years or 50 years, they make it mean something else, you know. But that doesn't mean anything to me other than fraud. And everything they've done is fraud. The whole process is fraud. And, you know, I don't care that they got this shingle on the courthouse down here in Dutchess County, and in the terms and the paperwork says, you know, Supreme Court, State of New York, County of Dutchess. That's my brick and mortar building. We built that building. Our tax money paid for that money. Our real tax money paid for the construction of that building, pays for all the office paper, the printing, the electric, the paint, the carpets on the floor, the desk they're sitting at, and the salaries they're getting paid. We paid for all that. And some people infiltrated that on every level of every state and every county and every town, and they've turned the shingles around and turned everything into corporations, and they made it corporatism. We live in a country of corporatism. And so because they turned all that around and they infiltrated as a maggot into the system, well, all we have to do, and this is what we're teaching at National Liberty Alliance, is take on the assumption of what is truth. Those buildings are ours. We're the people. And we're coming home, and we're going to go into that building, and we're going to take that building back, and we're going to flip those shingles around, and we're going to say Supreme Court of New York, Dutchess County, because that's what it is. And we're going to act as if it is. We're going to act as the people. We're going to act as free people. We're going to bring in common law, and whatever they say, you know, they can come in and say, hey, wait a second, you got a license, and look at you signed that, and you got U.S., and you're a U.S. citizen. You can't do that. They're not going to do that. Because that's the game, that's the word game that makes them comfortable so that they can get everyone else to buy into their fraud. And we're going to expose it all. And it's just a matter of time. So I really don't care about their word game, but I will be careful when I get where I go. But no matter what happens in the courtroom, I'm taking over because I'm suing everybody until I get a guy up there that's going to obey the law and just be the magistrate and not the judge because he doesn't get to decide anything because common law doesn't permit it. And if we have to go through 10 judges, and we've already exhausted all the judges in Greene County, they're taking us to count 2 counties away to get a judge to deal and talk with us on cases, and that's fine by me. And we're going after them, too. And we have some big, big things coming down very, very soon in New York. I cannot talk about it, but I think you're really going to be surprised and say, yeah, I'm not sure what we're going to agree upon yet, so I got to bring it to all the other people of New York. We're going to have a meeting, and I'm going to propose what I think is the next move. We have 3 or 4 different moves we can make, but there's one that I think should be the next one. And if they approve it, it's going to be unfolded very soon, you know, within the next, I don't know. I don't want to give it time, but it'll be a couple of weeks at least, maybe 3-4 weeks. But when it happens, you're going to know it happened. But I don't want to play the word game no more. I'm not going in their sandbox. I'm taking their sandbox away, and they're coming into mine. And I think that's the attitude we really have to have. You know, if you know your enemy, you understand what they're thinking. You understand how far they can go and how far they're capable of thinking because, they're, you know, the fiction is incapable of seeing reality. You know, these judges know. The lawyers don't. They really believe they're in the world of reality, but they're actually in the world of Oz, and they have no clue. And it's going to be hard for them to see, but they're going to see it, and it's going to be pretty devastating for them when they do see it and understand it. But look at, let's go into courts, and these are our words. You know, someone mentioned to me something about, you know, because I had gotten an opportunity recently to renew my license, and when I went there, I crossed out U.S., and so it left me as a New York citizen. At least that got me a little better. But then I realized just recently, I was talking with someone, it may have been Gerard, and I say, you know what? just put an A at the end of U.S., United States of America. Whenever you sign something, that's all. And you can still put, you know, your UCC thing down there or without prejudice or anything else. But you know what? I really don't care because they're never going to ask me to pull out my license and do anything. And I can be a citizen for one thing and a people for another thing. I can participate in the fiction if I want to, and I can get out of it anytime I want to because I'm the king. And I can go sweep the floors or I can wash the windows or I can sit up there and be the sovereign of the court and make the decision. I take on all those hats. And I don't have a problem with it. I yield the floor.
I agree with everything you're saying, and I'm excited that you've got such an awesome handle on it. I do not have quite that handle on it, and I'm excited to hear what you're doing. And one of the things I wrote myself was to get a copy of the paperwork that you were talking about earlier. I love the Supreme Court rulings because I think they are telling us secrets. They don't reveal it openly. You have to be able to read what they're saying. That's what I liked about Barron versus City of Baltimore when they clearly said the Constitution is for the United States and its own government, and not for the government of the individual states, because the states have their own state constitutions. And I think that's an important point that they bring up there. They all do take oaths to support the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution, so we actually can tie them up twice through their own oath. And I know in listening to the audio today, you talked about how they haven't taken it. Well, they actually haven't recorded the oath properly as required in the constitutions. You know, I look forward to seeing what's happening up there in New York because I believe you all are obviously setting a pace. We're looking at some different stuff here in Virginia and Tennessee that's in a different venue, but is in the same vein of taking things back at the local level. One of the things I see, you have a firm grasp of exactly who you are, what your status, standing, and capacity is, and a lot of people don't, and they're mixing, and I think that creates a problem, and that was just one of the things that I was wanted to point out. One thing I wanted to ask, I had a revelation 2 days ago at work, and I got excited about it, was understanding when the first grand jury was formed in America. Do you know when that was?
No, but I'm very interested to hear it. I know it was way before we became a people of America, way before we became a nation or states.
It was the group of gentlemen that met for a couple of years before they wrote the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
And I got excited when I realized that because that was the good people of the colonies. They were trying to communicate with the king on the private side of let's resolve this. The king was dishonorable. And I've read years ago where the Declaration of Independence is the tort claim against the king. What the Declaration of Independence actually is the first true bill of indictment written by the American people against the king. And I got real excited when that kind of flashed into my mind. I'm excited about what you're doing. My friend Marvin in Arizona told me to listen to the audio today, and I did. And I was excited by what I heard, and it helped fill in a lot of blanks about what you all are doing. Because of what the Constitution says in 1817 and what the Supreme Court has said, you know, when I reference the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, I simply say that it affirms my unalienable rights. And, I'm excited about the work that you're doing, and I'm excited that my friend is involved. I've got a couple of things I have to clear up, but I'm following what y'all are doing. and I release the floor.
All right, well, I appreciate that. You know, a couple of things. You know, I had a little bit of an epiphany recently. Matter of fact, I've been getting a lot of them, and I think anybody studying what we're studying gets epiphanies all the time, and the more and more you study, the more and more you get. And a friend of mine who is very knowledgeable of the law has argued many cases in the Supreme Court, both federal and state levels, and he's been one of my mentors, teaching me certain things. He had mentioned a while back, because we were concerned about the state of Washington, we were concerned about Oregon and a few other states, and we were trying to think out what they were doing and what they were saying, and they were trying to cut out common law completely through their constitutions, and particularly using their statutes. And of course, we know that's null and void, but they were very specific, I understand. As I looked further into it, I didn't see anything that was really specific. You know, New York has a specific way when they call for a grand jury, because they call the puppet grand jury, which is a statutory grand jury. They work for the corporation. It's a, you know, it's a fiction. It's not real. So if you get indicted by a grand jury, you're in a statutory court. They have no ruling over you. That court has no ruling. They have no jurisdiction. And that's kind of a shame in a one way, because, you know, a murderer can actually take up these positions and win in a case in a court. And they will never move over to the common law court in order to really, you know, to put this person in jail. And that would be a pretty sick thing, but it could happen. But you can control the courts if you keep muzzling the judges. And you can show that you have every right to do that. But anyway, getting back to the state thing. He had said to me, you know, well, look, you know, there is things in history or something in the past that where one state could go and rescue another. And so now I haven't learned that yet. As a matter of fact, I've been wanting to meet up with him to talk with him about what that was all about. But recently I realized when I was talking to people in Connecticut, and I said, New York will rescue you, because New York and Connecticut, they've gotten rid of their counties. Even though they still have county names and they call them, I think something else going on there. And they got rid of their sheriffs, and they have some strict things that prevent only the, I think, for judges to deal with the juries. And I think that's also in Washington or Oregon, you know, the judges have to call Montana, I think it is. But in any event, I said, well, New York will come in to rescue you. And it kind of just slipped out of my mouth that we are all part of the same contract. You're one of the 50 players in the contract, and if that state is breaking the contract, we can do something about that. And it's not the people breaking the contract; it's a corporation in the name of the people breaking the contract. And we, the people of all the 49 states, have every right to go and deal with Connecticut and make it right. And so we're going to look into that, because we're going to do that in Connecticut. Connecticut, we're going to Connecticut next month on the 4th. We're going to give a presentation to a few liberty groups out there. There's only 8 counties out there. We're going to meet in the middle of the state. We got people in almost every county now. We lack 2. Hopefully after this meeting on the 4th, we'll have everyone. So a week later, we're going to go out, and we're going to elect all 8 counties. And we're going to do that from the center of the state, which is very convenient for traveling, because it's a very small state. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to go right up the New England coast, and we're going to take care of also Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Rhode Island is real small. And we're going to go into Vermont and New Hampshire, and we're going to do some work up in Maine. And we're going to get our neighbors together. And we're going to do this very quickly. And so this is what other states should be doing. I know the West Coast, all the way on the West Coast, all the way in the Pacific time zone, they're working and helping Alaska, and help in Hawaii. And I know in the central part of the state, what would that be? I guess it's central time and mountain time. You know, we do have some states that really aren't developed yet that need some help, and those states that get further along, they need to be putting some time to helping those states and getting them along. And they should kind of look a little bit to them right now and start to develop a relationship. But we got to move this thing along. And the bottom line is, when we get into the courts, there's no way they're going to be the fiction. What's his name? Bill Thornton made it pretty clear in one of his lectures. And he said, look, he says, they'll never bring it up. And my experience tells me he's right. They're never going to bring it up. Because the last thing they want to do is reveal the fraud. They want the fraud set down. So what I did is I wrote a memorandum on law and jurisdiction. And there's not a case that I argue that I don't put that into it. And that reveals the fraud. It tells the judge I know it all. and it puts him on the spot. So if he actually does decide to read something, and it happens to be your case, and you have that memorandum in there, he's going to be right on you right away. He's going to be very careful. But if he's stupid enough to come in without reading the paperwork and trying to make a decision, then he's going to find his toes cut off or something, and you're going to put him on the other side. But the bottom line is they're never going to say to you, well, wait a second, you're a United States citizen. What are you talking about? I have a contract with you? Oh, sure. What contract is that? Is that a secret contract? You see, if they don't reveal the entire contract to me, that's fraud, and the whole thing is null and void. So everything they're doing is null and void. But I agree being very careful with our language, especially when we go into their sandbox as we take it away and bring them into ours. I don't worry too much about it, but I am careful with my language. I yield the floor.
I love what you're saying, and I hope you will send that memorandum to David, because I want to see it, as well as the two papers you were talking about earlier. And I'm interested in seeing the papers on the traffic court. And I agree, when I listened to your audio this morning, and you were talking about how they're all corporations, and even the police departments are corporations. We know they are. They're just private-for-hire corporations. And it is all contract, and basically what I hear you saying, and what we really need to get the people to understand, is it is all about contracts, and we have no contract with them, and we are the living man, and we aren't making a contract with that corporation. And it was exciting to hear you talking about that right now, that it is the contract. And I believe that's what the common law is. The common law is about contract, and I don't have the contract with you. And that's where they're tricking us with the statutes and stuff like that. They're getting us to argue the merits, and if we're arguing the merits, then gee, you must have a contract. And when you were first speaking, you were talking about, you let them know right up front, I'm the living man, and without saying it directly, you said indirectly in your acts, actions, and words, I have no contract with you. I yield the floor.
Well, exactly. Yeah, we have those papers up online if you want them, as long as you're signed in. Some of these tabs you won't see unless you're signed in. So as long as you're signed in, you go into Judicial, and you click on Court Case Examples. And on the course, Court Case Examples, we've got, we've come to a strategy, and someone brought this up to me, that maybe I should make a chart, and I realized they're right. I just got to find the time. I could probably put 3 or 4 cases up there and make a chart, and depending on how you're coming into court, you follow this line or you follow that line or you follow the other line, and just take the framework of the paper and put your personal information into it, and it's that simple. And it doesn't get any more simpler than that. And because really the whole argument and the whole battle is really simple. Doctor spends a lot of time building and working and conniving and hiding and working in the shadows and working around you and defrauding you. And it's a lot of work and a lot of things going on. But righteousness walks in and turns on the light, and it's all gone. And that's how I see this whole thing. When we had the epiphany of the realization of what could be done in the courts, the day after we read in the United States versus Williams, I mean, it was like, it was just huge, okay? Because everything became so simple. We don't have to worry about Agenda 21. We'll shut it right down. We don't have to worry about gun control. We don't have to worry about any of their stupid statutes. As long as we, the people, come together and understand the principles of common law, which is what National Liberty Alliance really works overtime to teach people, and that is, we work off the three principles that come from God. They're natural principles. We come in with a sense of honor, a sense of mercy, and a sense of justice. And as long as we're standing on those principles, we can't make any wrong decisions. And as long as we're constantly bringing that up to each other as we are looking into a case, we're not going to make any bad decisions. And we're going to keep everybody straight and on a narrow line. The other thing, of course, is the main two major maxims that we speak about. No victim, no crime. Every injury must be a remedy. End of subject. It rules. It makes it so simple. So, you know, and the duty of the common law grand jury is to fix and repair all wrongdoing it finds, whether it's in the political or the judicial realms, which means if the political realms is injuring our security by making all these stupid rules, laws, or whatever it is, well, we got to fix that because that's wrongdoing. It's going to hurt us. It's going to hurt our security, our tranquility, our potential tranquility. If the government is doing something and it's going to hurt one of the people, well, we got to fix that. If the judge is doing something and he's defrauding someone, we got to fix that. Wow, this is pretty darn powerful. Is there anything we can't fix? No, I can't think of anything that the grand jury cannot fix. And I'll tell you what, I think once you walk in and turn the lights on and you get the first rat or the first roach, okay, and everybody sees that, you're not going to see the rats or the roaches come out no more. They're done, okay? So I think there's going to be a lot of fixing on its own. You know, people say to me, we got to get rid of the lawyers because the Bar Association lawyers. Hang on, what do you want? Okay. You got to get rid of the Bar Association lawyers because, you know, they're esquires and it's in our Constitution and it was in the original 13th Amendment and all that. And they're absolutely right. But really, I think we have to pick our fights. And some of the fights we have to come to realize they're going to take care of themselves. Because let me tell you, when you get common law going, who's going to go out and hire a bar lawyer? There's going to be a lot of common law lawyers out there. I know I'd be available. And the other thing would be, what are all these lawyers going to do now that they're almost out of a job? I mean, they only got a few fields they can stay in. And so I think they're going to start leaving the bar in the droves. They already got the procedures and the process down. All they have to learn is the principles and the maxims of common law, and because it's all about common sense. And even they can find common sense once they come to the realization that they've been living in fantasy world. So all of that is going to fix itself. I think the judges immediately, I think one of the first things we're going to have to tell the judge after we straighten them out is, by the way, you know, leave the bar because you can't sit on the bar. That's a conflict of interest. And if you don't want to leave the bar, that's fine. You could just leave your job. So you make the choice. And it doesn't get any simpler than that. And Congress is going to know you're on your way up to them. I'm talking about the state Congress, you know, your assembly and your Senate. They know you're going to be up there, and so does the governor knows you're going to be up there too. So as soon as you fix your county, and we all fixed our counties, and we got a court system operating as common law courts, and we take a trip up to Albany. And we're going to befriend everyone. We're not going to be mean to nobody, but we're not going to be on a witch hunt. We're going to make them feel very, very comfortable. We're interested in saving the republic. We're not interested in revenge. We're not interested in wielding power. We're not interested in any of those things. If we get interested in that, then you want to give up the republic for that, then that's what you'll do, because you can't do both. But all of that evil is going to be judged because people are going to bring them those evils before us. They're going to come up and say, let me tell you what this judge did to me. Oh, we got a wrongdoing now. We got an injured party. For every injury, there must be a remedy. We didn't really want to go after Judge Harry over here because we just want to focus in on the front. But he did a wrong here. Judge Harry, how are we going to fix this? And most of these problems, I'll tell you what, I truly believe, because once they understand we need business and once they understand we're coming in to fix the house, and a lot of people are going to welcome us. You know, most of the I think the bureaucrats are going to welcome us. The elected individuals, you know, they're in it. Well, when they realize that it's not going to be as prestigious and they're not going to make as much money as they used to make, you know, they may start looking for another job. And maybe then we can get real statesmen in. But ultimately, if you have control over them and to fix any wrongdoing they may try to execute, then you know what? They're just going to do the right thing because they don't want to get indicted. They know you're watching. But I think most problems are going to be able to dealt with a phone call. You know, I think a lot of problems will be dealt with to go up and sit down in an office with a particular agency that has a serious problem and say, hey, look, you know, you guys got a real bad problem here and, you know, we just want to get it fixed. And as long as you do, here's the prescription, you write it down, and as long as you guys take care of this, we're all good. Oh, yeah, we'll take care of that. I believe them. I think they will. And if they won't, we indict them, remove them from office. And then they got to go hire a lawyer, not an attorney. It'd be crazy to hire an attorney. But You know, I see this so simple. Really think about this. We just have to be there, make it come to time before it fix itself. Literally. It couldn't get any easier. You know, talk about David and his three stones, and he only threw one to take down Goliath. That's all we're going to do. We're only going to toss one little pebble, and Goliath's going to come down. I yield the floor.
You've got a much better grasp of it than I do, so I have a lot to learn. I'm excited that I've got David and JW to help me. What specifically was the name of the memorandum that you were talking about that's under the judicial section of the website?
Oh, yeah. These are, you know, some of this stuff, I'll tell you what, if you really want to make a case, okay, the best papers, I'll tell you what the best papers are. The best papers is the traffic infraction. As simple as that is the framework of every case that I battle. I add more to it, and I got to write the just a little more, and I think I got to make notes of the procedures, what to do, A, B, C, D, and I'll try to get to do that. That'll be something that I will not post, at least not now, and it'll be something when, because people always come to me for problems, and they want to know, you know, how to write a paper, or how to do this, or how to do that, and I can give them a copy of that, and they can do it. So anybody who would ask, I would give it to. But, you know, they'll come out to crucify anyone who comes up with the solution that we're coming up with here. But the two memorandums that we wrote is the original one. One is the memorandum of the law of the case. The original memorandum of the law of the case was written by Bill Thornton, and I think he had about 16 pages in there. We have, like, 28 pages. So we added some stuff and we tweaked it about, and what the law of the case does is it lets the judge know what his job is. His job is to be sort of you keep things going in the court and to do the will of the sovereign of the court as long as it is injustice, you know, not injustice, but, you know, as long as it is just. And because that's his duty. So he's got to get back to that duty. He doesn't get to make the decision. That's my job. I make the decision. If the sovereign of the court is actually the jury, but if the other side is brain dead and they don't know enough to ask for a jury, well, they're going to get a big surprise at the end of the case because the sovereign of the court is now me. It's my court, and the jury is to do my will also. They're all on my panel. They reflect me. I'm the king of the court, and they're my reflection. And that judge up there is my reflection. That's common law. And as long as I'm bringing in my just story, and I'm giving them a good story, I'm showing them what this people did here. Let me show you right here. I got a good case because I'm just. A king won't go to court, or should not go to court if he's not just. Otherwise, he's an unjust king. And so they're going to rule in my favor every day, every time, as long as I can get up and articulate it and lay it out and show them. The other side can play all their tricks and magic and mirrors and smoke, but they don't have all those hidden loops in there to hide it all in, you know? So now they're naked in front of the court, and they're stuck. They won't even do an affidavit, and they'd be wise not to do an affidavit because they'd have to lie to get out from underneath any case that I would build around them. And that's why they don't. You know, you can walk in and use their terms if they were honest. The problem is they're not even honest. Even when you beat them on their own game, they won't acknowledge it, and they won't let you win. They still throw you out with no standing or no cause of action. They really play bad ball even in their own court. But the bottom line is you can walk into any court and win every case just by challenging the fact that there is no sworn affidavit here, therefore there is no case. Because you never get a sworn affidavit in a courtroom, not one I've ever seen, especially when you're going up against the government. What they have is they have the lawyers doing an affirmation. Well, that's nice. I'm happy he had a little story to tell. That's hearsay. He's irrelevant. He's not part of the case. It doesn't mean anything. And he gets this guy over here that's his client, says, just swear that whatever I'm saying is true. Yeah, well, still secondhand information. Doesn't mean anything to me. There's no sworn affidavit. There is no case. Any case that's been ruled against you, you can go back and you can arrest the judgment and reverse the entire case because of fraud on the court. Because there never was a contract, there never is, and there never was an affidavit of truth, there never is, and they have no authority over you. The judge is guilty of fraud, they both conspired, and to do whatever damage they did to you, they owe you a lot. And you could do that on your mortgage cases. You could do that on your credit card cases. You could do that on all these cases out there. And if you're going up against the government, every single argument against the government, you'll win. When I went into federal court, I only went in once. Within 2 weeks, I got an apology from the IRS. They told me they were very sorry. They didn't realize I was not liable to pay taxes in 2010. And they even sent me a release of lien within 2 weeks after that for $127,000. And I didn't even thank them. I just took it. Now, they owe me $127,000 because that's what we agreed upon when I did my my notice and demand that I would decide for them. And I put that before the judge. And the judge didn't make a decision on that, and he shouldn't make a decision anyway. He told me he was going to, but he never made one decision in my court. And they just went away. They didn't even end the case. They didn't say, sorry, we're on our way out of here. We're not going to answer you. They just went away. But I learned a long time ago, you know, if you don't have to stick a stick in a bee's eye, don't do it. You know, I'm not going to stick my stick back in there. I won. Leave them alone. They can have they don't really owe me $127,000. I only put, you know, 10 hours of work into the case and wrote a few letters. But the bottom line is I won in that case because they won't do affidavits. They had no proof of claim, which requires an affidavit. They had no fiduciary authority upon my CESQ funds, which they have to do an affidavit. And that's what I challenged. And when I challenged that, they all went into cardiac arrest. And the case was out. So you can win almost any case that way. But you have to put the flesh of the judge on the line. That's the very first thing I did when I walked into that court. And I let him know I accept the oaths and the bonds of all the officers in this court. And that judge did not answer me. And if he doesn't have a bond and he didn't answer me, he had a duty to answer me. Now he's a fraud on the court too. But if he ruled against me, I would sue him. And I would sue him for, again, the same thing, a conspiracy upon my unalienable rights and you know, between him and the lawyers, all the lawyers in there. And when I fought this case, I don't know how many lawyers were in there. Gerard, how many lawyers were there? Three, four, five lawyers? I don't know. I sued two banks.
Probably five if you add them up, the bank and the other.
Yeah, two banks, yeah. The sheriff, yeah. Two agents. And I made a mistake suing the IRS, but maybe I really didn't. After I did it, I realized that I shouldn't have sued them because it's a little hard to deal with them. But the agents, you know, I sued them. I sued them as people. They stepped out from their veil of protection, and they came at me under color of law to try to steal my belongings, my things, you know. And so this is really, you know, when you're really looking for the simplicity, you know, doctors, like I said, they'll put a long time into working their plan in order to get you. You just have to walk in and turn on the lights. And you think about it that way, you look for the simple thing. You know, truth is always simple. And it really is. Look how simple it is. There's nothing more to know than what I just said. And once you understand the enemy and the game they're playing and the fact that they swear to nothing and the fact that they're all frauds and the fact that they're all corporations and the fact that they're acting under corporate charter and every single action they do upon you is a violation of unalienable right. Matter of fact, maybe you might want to hang out for a couple of weeks, go to a couple of these meetings, just keep objecting, and you could probably earn multi-millions of dollars from all these lawyers when you finally turn around and snap the trap on them. So it really just as simple. I just don't know. You know, we should have seen it earlier. It took me 4 years of playing in their courts until we came up to realize how simple this really is. You know? So I guess the school of hard knocks, just experience itself, is the best school teacher. Oh, yield the floor. Sorry.
I love that. So, hey, David, there's somebody that's got a speakerphone on, and you can hear the echo in the background. Can you find out who that is and shut it down?
I'm not seeing it on here, Charlie.
Okay.
I'll look forward to.
When you talked about the two memorandums, where is the law of the case, and I look forward to reading that.
Right. The other one is the law and jurisdiction. That's the atomic bomb. You put that in the court. If that judge reads that, He's under his desk.
Great. And both of these are under the judicial tab of the website?
Yeah, go to the judicial tab, just highlight it, and you come down 1, 2, 3, it's the fourth tab down. It says court case examples. You know, we wrote a couple of books, too, and it may have been too much, but, you know, it's because you don't need, well, maybe you do, you might not need all that, but we wrote two books. The first book is Court Process and Access Procedures, Paperwork, How to file Papers, and how to write the papers, you know. And so the second book is a handbook in court, which is a pretty thick book, though. You know, I got a 3-inch ring folder, and I did different charts in the front, I did an index so that you can get through this court, and I did it alphabetically, I think. I don't remember. But you can get through the paper, you know, you can get through the ring folder quickly and pull out all kinds of cases and positions and facts and, footnotes. You know, when I discovered footnotes, you know, I fell in love with footnotes. I write with footnotes all the time. I try to keep the main part of the page as clean as possible to get to the point. And when it gets into a deep conversation to make a point clear, I write a memorandum. And in this case, I only need two. And then I express the meaning of all my phrases and words in footnotes. And when I go into a court, my paper's always full of footnotes. And you look at these guys that went to school, they're lawyers for 30 years, and they write a paper. It looks like, from my perspective, since I've gotten to a certain level through studying, I look at them, they're like third graders. I can't believe the garbage that they throw out there. And more times than not, they throw cases out that help me. I can't tell you how many cases we went around and say, hey, well, Your Honor, you know, that case actually helps us. Let me tell you what it really means, you know. And we did that in one of Gerard's cases. Turned right around, and it supported his case. These people are so dumb; it's pathetic. They're dumber than we are. So, you know, it's a joke. It really is. Whoever thought we were being ruled by a bunch of third graders? Because that's what we really are, to be honest with you. You know, we've got all these legal groups out there trying to come out after us now. They haven't approached us yet, but we found out about them. And the defamation group or whatever they are and some other legal group. But they say all these terrible things, but they have no clue what we're doing. And even the guy from Fox News that was talking to me, by the way, that interview is up there if you want to see it. I put it up there when I was talking earlier. It's under the welcome, and you click on radio interviews. And I think it was a very, very, what would I call it, a revealing interview because he told me some things. Well, maybe it's not there. I thought it was. Oh, I'm sorry. I put it under breaking news. Go to news. Click on news, and it's the top one on breaking news. And it says, right now it says, preliminary interview, foxnews.com. Now, he told me that they wrote papers that were very, you know, about us, that were evil. You know, he didn't use the word evil. I forget what he said. But they didn't have nice things to say about us. And so I haven't looked at them yet. I got to look at my email. And when I look at them and read them, I will post them right here, right next to this this little preliminary interview. The preliminary interview is maybe about 10, 12 minutes long. And the real interview is coming up maybe Monday. But he wants me to look at these papers, so I might want to comment on it. And I says, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to look at those papers and I'm going to write a paper to explain the truth of what you know, in opposed to what they're saying. And then you can talk to me and I'll answer any questions you want. You know, it's real easy for me because I just stick to the truth. I really don't care. And anybody that sticks to the truth, they'll have the same story over and over again, maybe told a little different, but there'll be no contradictions. And that's how a cop tries to figure out who the guilty party is because eventually you're going to tell the story with a contradiction, and other people will contradict your story. So, but we'll see what happens. I'm finished.
I'm interested in the arrest judgment information. I have two friends that can use this, Is that up there under the judicial tab also?
I think there's a lot of people use this one.
Oh, yeah.
And I just learned this one recently. Yeah, that's under the, let me go back up here. You go to judicial, and you go to court case examples, and I think it's the first one. Yeah, arrest of judgment. Now, think it out. We have been developing, and we think we're at a point where we really perfected the court case, where you can go in and fight any court case, you know, with a certain framework, because it's always the same thing. They don't have jurisdiction, and they don't have consent, and we're never going to give it to them. That's the argument every time you walk in a court. There's not a courtroom anywhere in the United States. I may be in error. There may be something somewhere, but not in New York, that's for sure. There's no courtrooms anywhere in the United States that's running under common law. And so every single courtroom is a fraud because they've hijacked every single one of them. They got all these bar attorneys working with the judges to defraud every person that walks into the court that thinks they're going to get justice. So there's not a court case in the United States in the past 50, maybe 100 years that you can't overturn. And that unfortunately, a sad thing, and I think we've got to be careful with this, that includes murder cases. They can all get out if
right.
They understood. And I'm not happy to give them that message, but I don't even know if they're guilty anymore. Who even knows anymore?
Right.
Who even knows what the hell is really going on here? You know, we do have a hell of a mess to clean up. We're going to get rid of a lot of work because we're going to be able to do this a lot cheaper than they ever could do it. We don't need a slew of lawyers. We just need people with common sense and to go in and deal with these problems. And I think we could deal with them very quickly. And once we catch up, I think the courts are going to be really used for real cases. And but the problem is that you're going to have a lot of people. Look, when you get in there, you're going to have to free a lot of people. We're going to be writing habeas corpuses all day long. Let's do one on everyone that's got a gun charge that isn't violent, that was just, you know, picked up because they had a gun. You know, let's get all these habeas corpuses, all these people. Let's get them before us and release them. Okay? We're going to be doing habeas corpus. We're going to just open the jails up. Now you're going to have the bad guys realizing and looking into this, and that's where the problem's going to come. I think we're going to get a hell of a workload from having to retry a lot of cases. Now, a lot of them, you might be able to work arrangements out with them and do it under contract in opposed to going through the whole trial again, you know?
Right.
And so we're going to have to pray for a lot of wisdom, and we're going to have a lot of patience, and we're going to have a lot of explaining to do to people so they understand. The problem is when you talk to people, you know, that have been trained. We're a nation of tweeters. We've been trained to tweet. We don't read no more. And I speak to myself first. You know, I'm the same way. I never was. Well, that's not true. I've always been a technical reader. So, but now I'm a ferocious reader and still a technical reader. But the people in general, you know, They don't, especially the kids coming up, the younger kids under 30, they just tweet. They don't know nothing. So, okay. Are we almost close? Because I'm about to have dinner.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm excited. I mean, I'm glad to have had this conversation in this time because it filled in a lot of blanks, even from the hour and a half audio that I listened today. And I look forward to reading these documents.
Right. Can we post this? Does anybody mind if I post this conversation?
Oh, I hope you do, because for me, like I said, I listened to the one today. I think it was on January 24th or something like that. I told you at the beginning, but I mean, this fills in so many blanks. I think this was an awesome conversation.
Great. All right, what I'll do is I'll post this on the Jurist document page. So that I don't want people who don't register to our program to, you know, hear or see certain things, because these are the things that they would try to use against us. And you know, we have, I don't know if anybody's read, we did some I don't know what you would call it, when people sign in, they have to, you know, say, you know, agree that they're not an agent or they're not coming in here to subvert you know, what we're doing. And so in order for them to register, they need to agree to that. And I think that's going to chase a lot of people away. I think we had on the call last Monday, I think we had someone who was a subverter. I heard the way they talked to me, and they were kind of going into an agreement, and then they came up to something. I forget what it was. I should go back and listen. And he says, you know, I got to leave this place. You guys are this or that. I don't know if anybody recalls that caller. I think it was this past Monday. But anyway, they're amongst us.
Oh, yeah.
We got to be careful.
One other thing I really like that you said, I was talking about that there's no affidavit. There's no firsthand knowledge. And I was listening to an audio that I get with Jack Smith, and he was talking about the Federal Rules 11, evidence, 90211, and that was what it talked about. It says the whole deal is if we don't call them, that there's no – where's the affidavit? I'm not interested in the court. The whole basis is if the witness doesn't have firsthand knowledge, then it's hearsay. But if we don't know to object and have it stricken –
right.
And again, because they're all criminals, they let it all stay in.
That's right. That's the game they're playing.
That's the game.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'd like to go eat. I'm starving.
Okay, John, this is David, Charlie. John, since you're going to eat, I'm assuming we don't want to entertain any questions. Is that correct?
Well, I'll come back another day if you want. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't think there's any need to entertain questions, because I think if we want to do another conversation, that'd be great. But I think with what John has here, if anybody hadn't heard the call that John had, let me pull it up here. It looks like it was January 24th, Awaken and Power Radio. If anybody hadn't heard that, they need to pull that down and listen to it. And between that and what John talked about tonight, I'll tell you what, I'm excited.
Okay, if that be the case, JW or John, do you know how to capture this so you can post it?
I record everything on Skype, and I, you know, I ask people before I post it. So if nobody minds, I'll post it. I already got a recording.
Okay, please do. I'm sure everybody on here would be in agreement with that, John. And so appreciate you and Charlie both for coming on here. This has been a very wonderful, enlightening evening. And look forward to more conversations and listen to some future things that will be coming out of New York. So thank you guys for paving the way. And thank both of you for being on here and all the callers. We appreciate all you being on here.